Sport on Highland, brought to you by michaelmurphysports.ie. Shop 24/7 with nationwide next day delivery.
A very good evening and welcome along to another edition of the Score programme here on Highland. Coming up on tonight's show, we'll be hearing from Brendan Devaney on the Dubs breaking public health regulations by training ahead of the scheduled return date. Former Fin Harps captain Keith Cowan gives his thoughts ahead of another weekend of action in the Premier Division of the SSE Air Trusty League, where of course Fin Harps are on the road once again as the league leaders go to Drogheda United. We'll also be getting the thoughts of the Fin Harps boss Ollie Horgan. Plus, towards the end of the show, we'll talk to Muffman Ronan McLaughlin about his latest world record breaking attempt, Everstein at Mamor Gap in Buncrana. But first, Dublin GAA has suspended senior football manager Desi Farrell for 12 weeks. Gardaí and the GAA are investigating after a number of Dublin footballers held a training session in Balgriffin. Among the players pictured at Inish Falls GAA club were Footballer of the Year Brian Fenton, Johnny Cooper and Brian Howard. The GAA say they are extremely disappointed and frustrated by the incident and could hand out punishments of their own. Dublin GAA say management and players have apologised for a serious error in judgment. Farrell will not take charge of the 7 in a row chase in Dublin now until late June, which means it's unlikely that he'll be on the sideline for any of the Allianz League, with the structure still yet to be confirmed. Huge news rocking the GAA world today. And earlier today, this is pre the decision of the Dublin GAA to suspend Desi Farrell, I've been speaking to Highland Radio GAA pundit Brendan Devaney about the whole situation. And he said this morning that he wasn't shocked or surprised that another inter-county team had been caught breaking public health guidelines.
I suppose not, Osh. We've heard a lot about it before. Listen, it's a very strange one at the minute. The fact that the GAA, the county teams, were taken off the elite status, and you've got, you know, other games going on. I mean, if you look at Soccer League of Ireland and that, a lot of people say, surely the GAA is more elite than that. I think just the huge, vast numbers involved in GAA teams. I mean, if you look at them, particularly at this time of season with squads, you could have maybe 40 to 50 people at a session. You know, multiply that by the hurling and the football. You're into vast amounts of people meeting up. And I think that's the reason that the GAA decided, the government decided to direct the GAA to hold back till we got the numbers down. And I think that's the difference. If you understand, I think the GAA and support the GAA, you know, the fact that the window has been open for training shortly, of course all county teams being at the level they're at want to get back, and everyone's worried about, you know, maybe falling behind another county, such as the rivalism and such as the elite nature of it, that we had an idea that teams were starting to come back, maybe in small groups, training now. If you don't like the GAA or you're not a fan of the GAA, of course you're going to look at this and say, here, look at all the sacrifices we're giving up here. Here's the GAA again, disobeying the rules. So it's certainly a bad news story for the GAA, but as you say, actually not a surprising one.
And I suppose as well, Brendan, the fact that it's your All-Ireland champions, it's the most dominant county in Gaelic football over the last 6 years, going for 7 in a row whenever the championship comes in 2020. Yes, we had Down. Yes, we had Cork previously. But the magnitude of it being the fact that it's Dublin, Brendan.
Yeah, interesting a lot of aspects, Oisin. Particularly, you know, you look at the media having to go after Dublin. You know, the Indo, Frank Roach and these guys, are they going to get access to players, or are Dublin going to hold a grudge against them next season? Because, as you said, they're the dominant force. There is where a lot of the stories lie and who they're playing and what's happened. So it'd be interesting if the media goes after them in the same way that they did Cork and Down. The only difference with Cork and Down would be that it was full teams were gotten together. This time, it is a smaller group. And saying that, I mean, the likes of Fenton, Johnny Cooper, Brian Howard, Cormac Costello were there. Now, if Dublin try and hide behind the fact that they just decided themselves to meet up because they were just so eager to get back, which is understandable, the session was, you know, it was coached. There was someone there taking the session, which makes you think that, you know, this was allowed and this was given the go-ahead by Dublin. I'm sure they will deny that. You know, obviously the Cork management and the Down management, you know, there was 8 and 12 week bans handed down, and each of them now have to play one of their home games away from home. Now, Weller Dublin will argue As I say, this was a small group session by a group of players organised by themselves, and try and avoid that type of ban remains to be seen.
The GAA, of course, are going to investigate this, and they've had a statement out today where they said that they are hugely disappointed by what was reported this morning. But what's the knock-on effect going to be from this, Brendan? And we know they are looking at a punishment, and they could lose a home game, there will be fines. But in the overall picture, GAA hasn't officially returned yet. It's not due to, they're not due to get back on the 19th. Will this have such a big impact that that could be kicked down the road, and the government are not going to like what they're seeing here?
Potentially, Oisin, you know, we're all thinking this from a GAA perspective, as in, yeah, okay, it's a blot and a jotter, and we move on. You know, Dublin take their punishment, but don't forget, this is the government that's deciding on what's happening, and if they think, listen, everybody's just going to go at it early and going to cause a problem, cause more infection, which, you know, let's be honest, Oisin, is going to lead to so many problems with people. There's not to say that they won't come down with a heavy hammer on this. I mean, Dublin GAA on their own website themselves, you know, produced the letter coming from GAA Director Tom Ryan and the President Liam McCarthy, outlining the fact that there was a huge warning given that if counties disobey this ruling for training coming back, that it could have implications for the whole season. That remains to be seen, actually. That would be a huge worry. You know, I think most people are just saying that the government will say, listen, what are you at here, and give them another stark warning. My own feeling would be that's what will happen, Oisin, and in many ways, maybe this will stop these stories coming out from other counties, because I think people might have been hearing rumours in the background now, maybe we can get together in groups and it won't bother anybody. I think, as you see here now, the whole light of the national media is going to come on you, so I think this will be a one-off story, Oisin, I would hope, pre-training coming back in the 19th.
Yeah, we're looking for training coming back, and then competitions hopefully in the middle of May, where we're going to see the regionalised league, and then possibly championship as well come June time after that, Brendan. We're going to get their sort of roadmap in relation to fixtures by the end of next week, and again we're going to wait to see if what happened today is going to have an impact on that. But what's your thoughts on the championship ahead? There is rumours going around that it's going to be the same as last year in straight knockout. Should we continue with the format that we've seen out the year with last year?
I think so, Oisin. And again, it's still a question mark about the whole championship. As it was last year, somehow we managed to pull it off. Like, no one could believe we did get across the line in that championship. And then we had a very strange start to the season, in terms of the start of the year for everybody, in terms of we were in severe lockdown and we still couldn't get the numbers down low enough. So that's all a bit of a worry, Oisin. I guess the only future for this whole situation and for everybody is the vaccines. You know, how quickly we can get to that, Oisin, is the only way we're ever going to say definitively, right, we have a season now and here's where we go. Apart from that, everything is just a guessing game and, I suppose, a trial and error. But make no mistake, Oisin, if things don't go right at the start of the championship or when these players can come back, the whole thing could be hauled over again. So that's why it's vital that everybody plays by the rules, and that's why this story breaking today is such a worry for everybody involved in the GAA, because so many people have spoken to me already, Oisin, you know, particularly as the weather starts to change. Now, I don't think anybody really like training or playing in these days. You know, going to games, depending on the day, might not be that enjoyable. But I think now, as we hit these spells of weather, a lot of people are thinking sport and enjoyment and how that filters down to everybody. But certainly, as I say, the vaccines is a way forward. And I was just wondering, if we have a certain age frame in the population, all vaccinated, whatever it is, over 65, surely we should allow all them into the GAA matches and get them to make a bit of noise for the players.
But from a club point of view, club players are not allowed back on a pitch yet. There's talk it's going to be mid-May, maybe June, by the time a club player is allowed to get back into groups of 15 or lesser pods and training at club level. But when you look what's going on in the north and the sixth counties, it's going to be confirmed probably next week. The club players in the north and the sixth counties can get back training as from the 12th of April. Now, if you're a club player around the rest of the country, and particularly Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan, you see that your neighbours in the north are allowed to get back. Do you see, well, Dublin, the All-Ireland champions, they're getting away with it. They can go out and they can train on a pitch. Is it not a worry that maybe there's going to be a big influx of club players now that think, you know what, the hell with us, we'll train as well?
Oisin, it's very interesting. I mean, that's all, as we say, come back to vaccines. The North, obviously, is way ahead of us and will be, and they know already they're going to be in a position where the vaccine dictates what they can do. I mean, whether now we can go on and train in the north and sneak into their setups, that's something that the border counties obviously are seeing. It's a different, at this point, it's such a different situation for them to us. So, you know, that's, I suppose, looking
at
them.
There'll be a frustration, Brendan, among club players in Donegal, seeing what's going on, who have not been allowed to do anything over the course of the last number of months. But there is pockets around the country that are doing this, and they'll be thinking to themselves, well, if everybody else can do it, sure, even though we're not allowed to do it, we'll go out on the pitch.
Well, there is a Garda investigation ongoing at the minute, Oisin, from a possible club training session in Cork last week.
Yeah, West Cork,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I would advise against anybody thinking that, you know, everybody else is doing it, we'll do it, because, you know, the guards have powers there, people can get fined, and as I say, if they investigate this, the club is brought in yet. So nobody wants this story at the minute. I don't think anybody in the south, Oisin, has any stomach for it, because things have been so bad here. The reason they can change in the north is simply because of vaccines. And if they're going to do that and get ahead of the game, Oisin, there's nothing we can do around that. It all comes back to the vaccine rollout and how slow we have been compared to the north. Maybe we can go on and as we're saying, particularly the border counties, we should be asking for jabs. I think that's the only future that we can really say, because this thing of pods and people come back to training and non-contact and all that, Oisin, how is that going to be policed? You know, I mean, the non-contact thing's a bit of a farce at this stage, particularly because players haven't been training in so long. They want to get in and get a proper session. And as for the young players in particular, Oisin, you know, lads that have played a long time, you know, maybe late going into their late 20s, early 30s, etc. It's not much a big deal, but all the young lads that's out there, all our young players, you know, underage players, lads in their early 20s, etc. This is such a horrible situation for them. And the quicker we can get back out and at least get into some kind of competitive exercise, the better. But again, Oisin, that's all coming down. The rules are all being sent down. We have to abide by it.
I know the rules are there, and we fully understand why the rules are there, Brendan. But did maybe the government and the GA get it wrong in not making inter-county senior Gaelic games an elite sport? Because they were told on Christmas Eve that they were in the bracket. Come February, they were not in the bracket. Should that have been kept in the bracket, Brendan, and we wouldn't have these problems now? We hope there's not going to be any more problems off the back of what we've seen today. We don't want to have any more reports of that, but it's quite possible that there could be more. We wouldn't be in this situation if the senior inter-county Gaelic games was kept elite.
Yeah. Again, Oisin, just the sheer numbers, I think, it caused that. If you look at it, there's no doubt in inter-county teams, most of them, anyway, are certainly in the top one or two divisions, would be on more elite than your League of Ireland, if you like. You obviously, the rugby players are playing, our soccer team at the minute looks like a League of Ireland team, the international one, if you like. I mean, there's question marks around all that, Oisin. I just think, as I say, the sheer volumes of numbers involved in that, Oisin, and where everybody's coming from, and the fact that they are, of course, amateurs, some of them are still working, and how they are then engaging with the squad of you know, upwards on 40 in terms of players and management, physios, etc. I think that was the big worry. I don't think it was so necessarily about the elitism or where they lay. I think it was the sheer numbers game, you know, of GA. I think that's what caused the decision. But certainly now, Oisin, when the map is back, of course people are going to start to try and tilt a wee bit early. And it's very different from, you remember years ago, the GA band training, collective training, and used to be stories of people training. That was just breaking a GA ban. This now is a government nationwide ban. So this is the big difference in the north, and that's why the GA has to be very careful coming back, because if they're going to have a roadmap that we're all going to abide to together, then we need to all do it together. It's the only way this is going to work, Oisin, and the season will go ahead. Otherwise, the north will be playing their own six-county championship.
So just finally then, Brendan, do the GAA have to show their authority here now and come down heavy on Dublin off the back of what we've seen in the Irish Independent and the reports today that Dublin were training? Is this now a time that the GAA will have to make an example of the All-Ireland Champions just to put that statement out to the rest of the counties?
Yeah, certainly, G. And again, Oisin, the media coverage, this is going to be very interesting. As I say, does Indo then have issues with Dublin the rest of the season, next season, under Desi Farrell? You know, it's very interesting to see how this plays out for the media. But certainly, the GA can only do it. I don't think they need to go any more heavy-handed just because it is Dublin. It should be just a normal case, the same as should it be Dublin, Leitrim, Galway, whoever. And I think the wee out ball that, that Dublin have in this there, I think this was going to be their play, Oisin, that this was organised by the players. You've got senior players in there that decided a small group they thought was okay, or there's going to be some attempt to say that. If this was a full-on Dublin training session, Oisin, I think there'd be huge repercussions from it. And I think they're going to hide behind the fact that the players organised themselves. Now, it's already come out that this was a coach training session. Again, they can say that, listen, senior players ask for a coach to come in and coach them. Who give the okay for this, Oisin? Will we ever know? But certainly I think the GAA won't be holding back in terms of what they do, because there'll be a massive outcry, Oisin, even from within the GAA, if people are seeing that they've gone soft in Dublin.
That was Brendan Devaney speaking to me earlier today. Again, that was recorded, and it was pre the decision of Dublin GAA to suspend Desi Farrell. He's been hit with a 12-week suspension after Dublin were caught breaking public health guidelines. They held a unofficial training session this week. Moving on now to soccer. Fin Harps will look to maintain their position as Premier Division leaders in the SSE Airtrusty League this coming weekend, while Derry City are also back in action with their first home fixture of the season. Harps are on the road as they travel to newly promoted Drogheda United. Get into Saturday evening's tie. Harps are the only side to win their opening two matches. It's been a dream start for the Ballybuffet boys, but it looks like they could be without star striker Adam Foley for the game due to a knee injury. Harps boss Ollie Horgan is hoping reality doesn't hit at Drogheda this weekend.
Look, we have a massive game on Saturday against Drogheda. It always has been against them in recent years, and this will be a hugely difficult game to try and get anything out. And, you know, we're kind of hoping that maybe reality doesn't hit us on Saturday, and that we can prolong maybe, you know, this another week.
Yep. You were always sort of targeting the Drogheda game, Ollie, when the fixtures came out, and you seen what the early games were going to be. But at this stage, really, did you think it? You would have 6 points at the top?
Look, there's no point in pretending you did. No, we didn't. But at the same time, it could easily have been no points with the way the games went. They were very, very tight, and, you know, probably one or two, maybe little bits of luck went our way in the last two games that normally wouldn't. But we could be sitting with nothing going up to Drogheda, which, you know, makes it even harder. But, like, you know, I think the reality of it is that our sons in Drogheda will be in or around the area of the table together. Whatever area that is, you know, I think most people presumed it was at the bottom level. And maybe it will be, only time will tell that. But this is probably more important than the last two games, and that if we got something out of this, you know, we would take it with open arms.
Is it a must-win game then?
We haven't won up there in years. We lost in a playoff. We narrowly bet Drogheda in an extra time in the second leg of the playoff. If we were to take a draw somewhere else or a draw on Drogheda, you probably would take the draw on Drogheda quicker, if that makes sense to you. There'll be maybe three different types of tables within the one table in the Premier Division, and I think we feel that we will be in or around where Drogheda will be, or we hope they'll be, to put it that way.
Yeah. They've had a solid enough start as well, Ollie. What's dangerous about Drogheda?
Hell of a lot. I mean, they have half a team from what was there before that we had huge battles with in both divisions and indeed in playoffs. They've added, you know, Premier Division winning players, the likes of Dane Massey, the likes of Ronan Murray, Gary Deegan, who came back from England via Shelburne. He's there. Darren Markey, who's a thorn in our side. Denny Corcoran, who obviously was with Bowes and Sligo, and that there's serious quality that they've added right through the spine in the middle of the team, on top of a very decent side that they had in the first division, and they were a handful without doubt. And, you know, they were very unlucky to lose in the last minute away to Pats, which is a very difficult way to go out of bed, Waterford at the start. And they know us very well also, to put it that way to you. It's a very difficult place to go up there, and we haven't had a great track record there.
Adam Foley has an knee injury. What's the chances of your goal scorer, your star man, lining out on Saturday?
We'll know tonight after training. We'll leave him as late as possible to see. He's struggling and didn't train so far this week. So we'll see where he's at tonight. And if it's too big a risk, well, then he won't be playing, to put it that way. We've another, after tomorrow night, with another 43 games, you know. And if he's not right, he's not right, to put it that way. And in fairness, we have a panel, a bigger panel than we normally have had. I've mentioned this before, and with 36 games, you need this. Last year, we probably got away with it because the season was curtailed to 18 games. Look, we'll see what he's like. We'd love him to be fit, to put it that way to you, but if he's not right, he's not right.
Yeah, and you've more strikers available, Ollie, than you've had before as well. So
absolutely. You know, often it gives him a lesser chance, but like, if you're in form, as Adam is at the moment, and he is right, he'll play. But there's a but there, and we won't know till later on today.
And if you are going to be in the mix in the Premier Division, as in out of the drop zone, Ollie, you need other players to step up. You need other scorers. You just can't rely on the Dubliner.
No, absolutely not. No, look, I mean, as I said, there's very little difference in centre between whoever is number one or whoever is number 22. And while you know, it might go against you at times where you'd love a superstar along the way, we don't have that. But the advantage of it is that if players are out, as in Adam's case, you know, you have someone to come in to take their place. It's not like, you know, you have nothing to replace it. And that's probably the biggest step up that we've made, that we have put together a bigger panel of maybe equal ability players.
Yeah. How long's Ryan Connolly going to be out for, Ollie? It looks like he's going to miss this week again. That hamstring injury picked up against Bowes. Obviously a man that's key for you around the middle of the park.
Yeah, Ryan will be out long-term as opposed to short-term. He got a scan, and we're seeing whether he can recover without any operation, that type of way. Only time will tell that. But that's a long term injury. Unfortunately, we need Ryan, and we won't have him for the foreseeable future, to put that way to you. But please God, he will be back. But look, other lads will come in and step up for him. Hopefully that he will get back in the maybe not too distant future. Maybe the best way of putting it here.
Finally, Ollie, we're in a situation where we mentioned at the start of the interview that you're top of the table, and it would be a situation and a position that the fans of Finn Harps would be dreaming of. And we can only imagine, as we would head to the second home game of the season against Waterford in just over a week's time, that if Harps were top of the table, staying top of the table, that Finn Park would be rocking. And I suppose I'm sure there is a bit of a feeling of disappointment around the club as well, that the fans can't be with you in this, in the ground, when Harps are going so well.
Yeah, Shane, I mean, you know, for a whole lot of reasons. Obviously, you know, to back us, and I've said it many, many times, through thick and thin, they've backed us, and we've put them through thick and thin, to put it that way to you. Obviously, when you're going well, you'd love to have them. We'd love to have them when we weren't going well, and they normally draw us over the line and help us survive. You know, for a whole lot of reasons, for the team, financially, you know, it's a huge loss to us as well. Probably, you know, the advantage of it is that we're going to draw them Saturday night, where they won't have that home support to roar them on. So, like, it goes, you know, obviously they're a massive loss to support us just at home. We just hope that we can stay some way up the table by the time that they are allowed back in. And please God, we won't be down at the very bottom when the doors open again.
Okay, Ollie, best of luck in Drogheda on Saturday. Talk to you soon.
Okay, Oisín. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Kick-off time for that Finn Harps game at Drogheda United is at 6 o'clock, and we'll have live updates from the game as from the kick-off time on Saturday with David Hollywood. Derry City are also back in action this weekend. They lost their opening tie to Longford. They're looking to make amends for that defeat when they host Waterford United in their first home game of the season on Saturday, also at 6 o'clock. Before that, we've got two very interesting ties. One of those is the defending champion Shamrock Rovers up against Dundalk. That's tomorrow night, Friday. Also playing Friday, Sligo Rovers are away to Longford Town. A victory for Sligo. Other results go their way, and Liam Buckley's side could be top of the table on their own come Saturday night. In this week's League of Ireland Premier Division chat, I'm joined by former Finn Harps captain Keith Cowan, who is now playing his football with Glentoran in the Irish League and has also dipped into the broadcasting world with the Allergic to Silverware podcast. Looking ahead to the weekend's games, Keith says he's been impressed with what Harps have done so far this season.
It's a great start for them, Austin. You know, they'll be delighted. I don't think that they could have, I know the fans anyway, I'm sure, were really excited with the draw, like as were the rest of us. You know, the way that they've, you know, went about their business, really professional. You know, they took confidence from, you know, wins in Dalymount last year. you know, going to Dundalk and nicking a point last year. It's been a great start for them. The squad has been put together that we've, you know, that we've been speaking about. Absolutely excellent. Couple of great signings. Again, experience, League of Ireland experience, or, you know, experience in top flight football. And they seem to have all settled in quite nicely. And as I say, just adding to, you know, the good work that Ollie and Higgsy did last year. And as we say, you know, a couple of those 6 points early on that maybe that they wouldn't have been banking on. You know, you might look at the next few games coming up, and those are the ones that would have been they've been earmarking for maybe a point or 3 points. But you know, getting those 3 points at home, first game of the season, gets you a great start, and then going away to arguably the most difficult away fixture of the lot, Dundalk, and being comfortable and getting another 3 points. So it's been an absolutely brilliant start for them.
Yeah. We've got our second home game to come now on Saturday week against Waterford. But you could be sitting with a possible 9 points, 3 ones from three, which we see now the way Harps have performed in the opening two games as a realistic target, Keith.
Definitely. You know, as I said, this coming to the next few games, now Drogheda this weekend and then Waterford, those are the games that we would have been earmarking for, you know, maybe our first win or our first points on the board. There is no easy games in this league. There's always a few surprises early on. You know, we've seen Derry going to Longford and, you know, Longford beating them. You know, even Longford going to Bowes last week and then getting a point. So there's been a lot of... The league will take time, as it does every year, you know, in most leagues, just to settle down. And, you know, there'll be a lot of, you know, teams maybe taking the newly promoted sides a bit lightly, maybe, you know, thinking that they're going to be easier games than they turn out to be. But, yeah, look, I think if they can, obviously injuries will come into play. There might be a full deck to pick from this week. But, you know, I think they'll be looking towards Drogheda as maybe one of their toughest games. But as we say, Drogheda had a decent start as well. So they were unlucky last week, just a last-minute goal pipped them away to Pats. So they'll be thinking they need to bounce back as well. So it'll definitely be a tough game for Harps this weekend.
Yeah. And saying that, these performances now at the start of the season, if they can continue with it, keep momentum going, this could prove to be very, very vital come the end of the season and down the road October time, Keith.
Definitely, Oisin. Like, momentum is key, you know, and they would be hoping for a great start. And you always, I can just talk through experience, you know, you never know where that first 3 points might come from, especially in the Premier League, and you want to get it on the board early. Now they see themselves sitting with 6. You know, they might even be looking, teams will be looking at them with a bit of a target on their back. You know, Drogheda, I don't think they'll fear Harps as such coming down, you know, with the acquisitions that they brought in the off-season, the likes of, you know, Daniel Riley that we know that was at Harps, Denny Corcoran experience, Dane Massey. You know, those are lads that, you know, still, you know, Dane Massey and Denny Corcoran, still 32, you know, still a lot of football to play yet and experience and coming from sides where they're used to winning in. You know, Ronan Murray as well, that was at Sligo and Dundalk coming in. Like, a couple of very experienced players, good signings, and they'll be relishing the game come Saturday.
We see this week that Adam Foley is a doubt for the game. He, of course, has been a pivotal player for Harps in the opening two matches, getting the 3 goals. How big a blow is it to Ollie Horgan of Foley if the Dubliner's not available in Drogheda?
Well, look, the start he's had has been brilliant. You know, the big man's come in and done really well. You know, tail end of last season, you know, a couple of vital goals. This season, you know, playing that lone striker role, I've been very impressed with the way that he's gone about his business. And he's, you know, instead of just being a target man, he's been chasing down defenders, chasing down goalkeepers. And that's come up trumps for him. A goal, you know, from a bad back pass against Bowes. You know, he capitalised on that. Dundalk trying to play in areas which were very tight. Keeper makes a mistake and he gets another goal. So his confidence will be really, really high, obviously, for a striker to get goals early on, get him settled in. You know, he'll be probably more gutted than anyone if he is missing for this week. And again, the fact that, you know, Harps have a goal threat, which was an area that, you know, over the years has been a struggle for Harps. You know, the fact that he was, you know, off and running. And again, a leader on the pitch, an experienced man who's been around. He could be a big miss. But then we have to look at the lads. You know, it's a big squad. They've brought in Shanley from Hibs on loan. They've brought Olabi from from FC United Manchester. Aki was at Hamilton as well. I'm like an academical, so he's come on with good stock. So they have options. They have Carroll Sullivan there, who was, you know, in that kind of lone striker role last year. So he has loads of options. You know, again, a big squad that he's put together. So maybe giving Foley a break, or if he has picked up a knock, you know, again, might be a bad thing. It'll give someone else a chance, and you know, I'm sure because of the start they've had, there'll be a lot of lads looking to take that chance.
Yeah, there's a different sort of expectation around this Finn Harp side and Finn Park now at the moment, given that they've had such a good start. Are we maybe getting too ahead of ourselves yet, Keith, with it?
Okay, you know, again, everybody wants a good start, you know, and they have, and they've had that. Like, I don't think it's a massive surprise. If you look at the squad of players that they have, if you look, you know, you go through Mark McGinley, you know, great, excellent goalkeeper, has, you know, this will be his third season in the Premier League now, you know, really assured, pulled off, you know, numerous great saves last year. I think he could play of the year the last 2 years in a row. So that just tells you the caliber of goalkeeper that he is. You look along the back four: Webster, Siddiqui, McElhinney, Ethan Boy. Other than Siddiqui, you know, he's a young lad, but again, coming from Hibs over in Scotland, obviously got a lot about him. Looks very assured in there. You know, you've got Premier League experience with the other lads in there, coming from St. Pat's. You know, Ethan Boy, who was at Hearts before, we know him well. You know, going to Shamrock Rovers, going to Linfield. You know, there's a slight embarrassment of riches there, almost, you know, and then you have Folan as well that I haven't mentioned. Is he going to get his game? You know, you have a couple of local lads. There's a bit of expectancy from, you know, just quiet, or maybe quiet confidence almost. You look around the other teams in the league, you know, we have a great squad. Hearts have a really good squad, and, you know, that's down to the board, who have been generating funds, who have been, you know, knocking on doors and seeing what avenues are available to get money in. And, you know, they seem to have, you know, spent it well. So all credit to them, and all credit to Ollie and Higgsy.
What would be a good result on Friday night? Would you be happy enough, or Saturday night rather, would you be happy enough with a point on the road at Drogheda?
Notoriously a tough place to go for Hearts. You know, we were down there a couple of years ago. I remember a playoff, and, you know, we, again, with a lot less of a side, you know, they nicked a goal, I think, in the last couple of minutes, and they were off celebrating. There was flares going and everything. I think they thought the tie was over, but they'll have learned from that as well. But I think Ollie says, you know, if we scrape a draw in the last minute, we'll be delighted. You know, his optimism hasn't changed too much to the media, anyway, that's for sure. But look, I think there'll be a confidence about them now. They're a settled squad. You know, the experience. You know, you have McNamee there in the middle. You know, Mark Russell's been playing a lot. You know, doing really well. Mark Coyle, absolutely excellent the last couple of games. So there'll be a quiet confidence amongst the squad. Ollie won't let them get ahead of themselves as usual, and you know that's fine as well. But you know, there'll be no surprise if we see them going and winning because of the start they've had. But if you ask Ollie now, would he take a draw in his heart of hearts? I think a draw is a good result there.
Yeah, let's look elsewhere in the league. Derry City back in action this weekend. Keith, they did, of course, miss last week due to internationals. Didn't get off to the greatest of starts. Lost out against Longford, which proved to be a tricky tie. You mentioned about the confidence within Harps at the moment. Mm-hmm. The Brandywell, is it about building confidence in this young, youthful Derry side that Declan Devine has?
Yeah, very much so. I think, you know, not many. I think if you look at the on paper going to Longford, the first game of the season, you know, it would have been a routine game. But as we know, these games aren't played on paper. The squad he has is young. It's a very young squad that they've put together. They've brought a lot of lads across from across the water who had been on the fringes of teams, you know, maybe under-21s and under-23s. You know, looking at their squads, it's just a bit inexperienced for me. They will have their work cut out. You know, you have the likes of Owen Toll, you have Kieran Call. You know, those are your experienced players, even young Hargan in the middle of the park, you know. These are your experience. And Parkhouse, who was there, you know, 2 seasons ago, done really well, scored bag full of goals, but that was kind of fitted in around a really, you know, experienced Derry team. It'll take time for those players that have come in to settle to get, you know, the rigors of the league. Longford would have been, you know, major underdogs, I think, you know, and probably most people's favourites to go down. I thought they would struggle anyway. But, you know, they have used that underdog tag really well, picking up 4 points in their first two games. So Derry will have the work cut out. You know, again, Waterford coming this weekend, I think they have. So is it Waterford this weekend?
Waterford on Saturday as well.
Yeah, Waterford on Saturday. So, you know, again, another young side. So it'll be battle of the young lads this week. And, again, Derry will want to get the monkey off the back. You know, ease a bit of pressure. Again, it's only one game. You know, they've lost one game and already, you know, the warning signs are there. But, you know,
getting a one can make a whole lot of difference. So it can as well.
It can change the outlook for about 100%, you know. So I think just there, like if you look at Dundalk at 1 point, you know, and now we're talking, like, they have one more point than Derry, and they were thinking, oh, Derry's in trouble here. So, no, I think it'll just take a time for settle. You know, Devine and McCourt will have, you know, looked at these players. They'd have, you know, trying to get a good mix in there. They have a couple of older lads that have been there for, you know, for a few years and have that experience. So it's just about getting these young lads used to the league and maybe the pace of it and the physicality of it. But, you know, give them time to settle.
Just at the top of the table, you mentioned Dundalk there, that they only have 1 point. We've seen last year the change in guard that came about with Shamrock Rovers. There has been change at Dundalk, or is it too early in the season to be judgmental that maybe they're not going to be the Dundalk of old? But is it already at this early stage of the season, we can see maybe a gap between those two sides?
For me, yes. It's not the Dundalk of old, because the lads have moved on. That's one thing's for sure. You know, the experience that they would have had, you know, along the back with Rogers, you know, Massey that we mentioned that went to Drogheda, you know, Sean Hoare that went to Rovers, you know, Gannon that went to Rovers, you know, a massive change in what they've been doing. Benson, who moved on the Pats as well the season before. You know, Georgie Kelly, that somebody that they would have been looking to bring off the bench, essentially, if things hadn't been going well. And then we look who they brought on against Harps. You know, they brought on a lad 17, 18 years of age, and a lad that hadn't been played in the league before, you know, so he's new to the whole setup. They just don't seem to have the resources. I'm not sure if the players that they're bringing in, that they maybe have spent that budget, because you had the, you know, the local based lads that were there. Again, it's, you know, who's the manager there? Like, you know, it sort of has changed, you know, with the assistant manager now becoming the manager. I think we're all just kind of looking at that one and seeing which way it's really going to, you know, pan out. Because, again, now coming to last week against Hearts, they were missing two internationals that were away, the centre half, away with the Faroes, and they had the lad who was away with the Latvian national team as well. So you're taking two internationals out of any team is going to make a massive dent. Patrick McElhaney was injured. So, you know, and he really makes them tick. He, you know, he obviously got the goal the week before. Again, young lads, inexperienced lads that they have brought in by the two internationals, again, it's one we just have to look at and see how it pans out. Not be maybe throwing the kick. As Kenny mentioned earlier on the week, people love to kick them when they're down, and we all like to have a look at it. But I think it's just time will tell on that one, but I think everybody will be keeping a close eye on it.
Okay, Shamrock Rovers are, of course, hosting Dundalk on Friday night. If Rovers were to win that, is that an early season mark to go, hey, we are the side to catch here, and it would be a statement by them?
I think so, yeah. I think very much so. I think we see, you know, a lot of people might have put them as champions before the ball was kicked, you know, because of the how well they did last year. Again, the players that they've added to that squad, not having moved too many men on. No, McInniff moved on, went to Hearts over in Scotland. But, like, when you think of the players that they have, and, you know, again, internationals in the team, and, you know, lads that have stepped up from, you know, under-21s, like, again, this is something that the Dundalk really need to look at. They need to get their lads back in. There needs to be a few home truths. There needs to be a couple of rollickings handed out after last week. I think that in the manner that they conceded the goals against Hearts will disappoint Dundalk the most. And if they're going to be shipping goals like that from, you know, from a dodgy touch from a keeper, trying to play too much in the wrong areas, and then, you know, the second goal that we saw Foyd take so excellently, you know, great through ball from Mark Russell, and, you know, he's finished it really well, but the back four was all over the place, you know. Dundalk really do need to figure out what's happening, who's in charge, who's taking responsibility. Do we see Gartland coming back in, you know, who was a mainstay for so long with that experience? You know, is he going to come back? And will we see him, you know, back in the back four, marshalling things, organising, you know, big voice in the changing rooms? They'll need to do something very quickly, or they could see that gap between Rovers and themselves really, really spread out.
Yeah. We'll mention Sligo Rovers, who could find themselves at the weekend joint top of the table with Finn Harps, two North West sides, which would be mm-hmm. for soccer in this region in particular, Keith. But one thing about Liam Buckley, Sligo were absolutely brilliant towards the end of last season, and they've carried that form now into this season as well. One of the most exciting teams to watch, would you agree, in the League of Ireland?
Yeah, they look great. You know, again, a young enough team, added a bit of experience with Bulger coming in and that. They got Romeo Parks back, who was with them a couple of seasons ago after a stint in America, who's, you know, a strong, powerful centre forward who will score all types of goals. He got a great volley there at the weekend against Waterford, and the young Gibson that as well. You're thinking Parks' goal is going to be contender for a goal of the season, you know, a volley after a lovely cross, and then, you know, Gibson comes up with that type of magic. You know, great advertising for the league, the quality of goals that were scored. Sligo, again, you know, have signed really well. You know, another young lad, hopefully will get his chance soon, is young Shane Blaney, who's come back from across the water, hasn't got his chance yet, but, you know, you feel it's coming very soon. Haven't made major changes, again, but added really well. And, you know, who would have thought, you know, after maybe three or four games in, we're looking at a top-of-the-table clash, Harps v Sligo and North West Derby. Like, it doesn't get much better than that.
Prediction then for Saturday night, Harps on the road at Drogheda.
I'm gonna go a 1-0 win for Harps. I think that although I said a draw would have been a great result, like the way that they've been playing, you know, they haven't been, they're so organized, you know, they're so hard to break down, you know, going away to someone like, you know, Drogheda, who they'll be thinking as the season pans out that they might be a bit closer together, whether it be at the top or the bottom, we don't know. But I think a 1-0 win and up the road and 3 points, and then we can go and see how we go.
As former Harps captain Keith Cowan, as we get his thoughts ahead of the weekend's games in the Premier Division. Finally, Donegal cyclist Ronan McLaughlin has reclaimed the Everstream world record by smashing the time by almost 20 minutes. He climbed the 8,848 metres in a fantastic fast time of 6 hours, 40 minutes and 54 seconds to take the record off American Sean Gardner. McLaughlin, of course, is no stranger to Everstream. Last July, he set the world record. On that occasion, he was also 20 minutes faster than the previous record set by 6-time Grand Tour winner Alberto Contador. So then, back to this attempt. It was only confirmed on Monday, but McLaughlin set the new record last Tuesday, the 23rd of March, back at the Scenic Mamore Gap.
Mamore's certainly been kind to me now, so it has. That's a couple of times that I've been over there and done this Everson thing, and yeah, it's gone well every time. The first time was Irish record, and then the second time was a world record, and yeah, I sort of had already planned to. You know, I felt when I set the world record last year that I had a bit more left in the tank that I could improve, basically. And I had been aiming towards that. And then over the winter, somebody else bettered my time, and American fellow Sean Gardner. So not only did I have to go back and improve my own time, but it would be nice to bring the record back to Donegal as well. So, yeah, we went out last week. And unfortunately, you know, the situation, the way things are at the moment with coronavirus and COVID-19 restrictions, and that just had to be, you know, completely top secret. It was basically, you know, myself on the hill with a couple of people at either end, just as a backup team. And you know, that was actually one of the most difficult things, and that everybody who's supported me, you know, through the years and that, and not being able to tell them this was happening this time and not having them there for the support. And then, you know, if I think back to last summer when I did it, and the final hour or two, there was maybe, you know, there was a huge crowd up on Mamore Gap, and that support really, really helped for the final, you know, the last hour that's the most difficult. And not to have it there this year was tough, but yeah, it's unfortunately that's the way things are at the moment.
Yeah. I remember talking to you a number of years ago when the RAS was coming to Donegal, and how trying and at times how horrific Mamore Gap can be. But as we said this day, you've sort of developed a love affair with Mamore now over the last 12 months or so. Because I don't know how many times you've been up and down it, if you were to tally over the last 12 months, how many laps you've actually done of it, Ronan. But you've sort of changed it every time you've done it. You're only using sections of it, and depending on the incline and the degree of difficulty. And obviously, you had to add up to the amount of feet you had to do as well, the same height as Everest.
That's it, yeah. And I think something ridiculous like 240 or 250 times in the last 7 or 8 months that I've been up that hill. So I think I've seen my fair share of it at this stage. But yeah, you know, the secret to Everest thing is just reaching that, you know, repeating that climb as many times as it takes to reach the cumulative height of Mount Everest, which is 8,848 meters. And I had to climb more gap 75 times for the actual record attempt. And what I was sort of doing by changing the segment was just picking out the steepest part. So then, although obviously it's more difficult to cycle up the steeper sections, all of your energy is going into, you know, altitude gain rather than distance. There's no prizes here for how far you cycled, and the lower amount of distance you can cycle, the better. So what I was trying to do was just have it as steep as possible, cut down the distance and save time that way. But it does mean you're spending quite a lot of time going uphill, you know, pretty slowly.
Yeah. You also had was it an advantage to have the wind last Tuesday when you were having the attempt? Because obviously when you go up the steep incline, it helps to have it behind you and you're not going under the headwind.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's, I wasn't going to wait for a day with a headwind anyway. Ideally would have a tailwind, and that's part of the sort of balancing act as well, is that you're waiting for the right day in terms of fitness and freshness as well. So you're building up your training all the way through winter, and then it's hard to pinpoint when exactly to focus your peak form, because you are really dependent on the weather. And we had initially planned to do it this week now that I'm chatting to you, and what happened then was that the weather forecast, you know, suggested a huge turnaround there and what we'd been waiting for. And basically what we're waiting for is a day with either very little or a southerly wind. We want it to be dry so the turnaround at the bottom can be as quick as possible. We wanted the temperature range to be somewhere between 10 and 13 because that's ideal for endurance performance. And then we also wanted low atmospheric pressure with a bit of cloud cover so that I wouldn't be getting a bit of sun. But what tends to happen if you have a warm, cloudy day with low pressure in Ireland, it tends to be raining. So getting all those things, it really was just a balancing act. And I think what happened last week was I just woke up one day, seen the forecast for 2 days later was going to be as close to ideal as we were going to get. And although the training and the tapering wasn't perfect at that point, you just have to go for it.
Yep. Did you think you would break it by 20 minutes? You did say that you had a bit more in the tank, but did you think the time difference would be so big?
It's very difficult to know. Like what I set out on the day was to break it by 9 minutes, to go 6 hours, 50 minutes. But I very quickly realized that with the times I was doing in the opening laps, it was going to be, you know, barring catastrophe, it was going to be much faster than that. So you're trying to make the calculation on the fly. Can I go this hard for 7 hours? And do I need to back off? Or, you know, if I back off and then I finish with more left in the tank again, I'd be disappointed. So it's very difficult to say exactly what you're going to do. I had a goal on the day of doing 7:50, but I had this dream in my mind of, and I'd written it down somewhere at some point, that I wanted to do 7:30 something. So I felt a little bit shy of the 7:30 mark, but I think that was, you know, a couple of factors beyond my control.
Yep. What will the rest of the world be thinking now that's into this Everesting challenge when they see that Ronan McLaughlin has smashed it once again? He's got 6:40 on the clock. That's a serious marker, a serious sort of marker now for guys around the world to go, right, can we beat this?
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, there's a couple of people maybe inspired to go out there and do it. I know there is a few attempts that are ongoing at the moment, so I can speak to my sort of experience on it. And over the winter, you had heard about, you know, different riders tackling the record and all that. And it doesn't really change what I was doing, and that I was trying to just focus on my training as best I could and focus on optimizing my setup on my bike as best I could. And then you just go out and do the best you can. So I don't think my time will really impact what others will do. And I'm excited to see, you know, who'll give it a crack next. And more excited to see if any of the crazy things I did to my bike, that they might be replicated in other attempts. We'll have to sort of wait and see on that one.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to ask you the question. If it happens and somebody breaks your time, are you going to have to do more crazy things to your bike? Are you going to have to do more crazy things with your body to try and get a world record again? Is it something that you would take on again if persuaded or if your time is beat?
I think I was actually asked this question there recently. I think the answer would, rather than the whatever time the new record might be when it happens. So if it happened within the next week or so and I still have the same form and the same sort of fitness, I might be convinced to try it again. But if it happens in 6 months' time, yeah, you know, it's been a long 6 months training and building up towards this, and you know, watching the diet and getting, you know, nutrition and training and sleeping and everything dialed in, and I don't know if I could put myself through that again so soon.
Yeah. I know Sean McFadden will be looking for me to ask you, are you going to try and break your 5-5-5 record now in 2021 if you decide not to do any more Everston?
Well, hey, the 5-5-5 is always something that I for some reason, enjoy doing it. So I wouldn't rule that one out. I hadn't thought too much about it at the moment just because the plan has been solely focused on Everston. So there's a couple of things that myself and the Cycling Tips crew are sort of thinking of and working towards. Nothing confirmed yet, so we might
can you indicate what those are?
Well, I would if I knew exactly what they were. We're sort of looking at not so much records, but just, you know, really interesting sort of adventures and challenges and stuff like that, and hopefully as much of it as possible will be locally based and keep Donegal on the map, so to speak.
Okay, just finally then, the response I'm sure has been great over the last 24 hours or so when the news broke that you were top of the world again.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. Like, and we had hoped to have a documentary ready to go at the same time as the news story would come out, and that's why we sort of delayed the news story. And you know, ultimately there's a small bit of a delay in finishing the edit on the video, so we decided just to put the news out there. And in hindsight now, I'm glad we had those 5 or 6 days that the news wasn't out there, because the phone just has not stopped since, and emails and tweets and Instagram and all sorts has been, the phone's on meltdown at the moment. So just to have those few days to be able to recover from it, and then the attention it's gotten in the last 24 hours has just been phenomenal.
And well done once again to Ronan McLaughlin, a world record holder, a double world record holder. And that brings an end to the Score programme for tonight. If you missed any of the show, you can, of course, listen back or indeed watch back as well by going to the sports section of our website, highlandradio.com. That's your sport for today. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening. Chris Ashmore will be back with our next bulletin tomorrow morning after the 8:30 news.
Sport on Highland, brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure. Gear up on all the training essentials at michaelmurphysports.ie with nationwide next day delivery.